work. We will get to that because the ending of Oregon State UCLA Friday, it's just, what do they say? Fact is greater than fiction. Folks, our guest, the longtime returning champ from her days covering Oregon State for the Oregonian, then Sports Illustrated, and now she crushes it for USA Today. On Twitter, the handle is at Lindsay_Schnell. Lindsay, always great having you. How's life treating you these days?
Hey, it's good. I got to watch two awesome women's games in person this last weekend, and everyone who knows me knows that women's basketball is my love language, so I'm a happy camper.
You know, I'm so happy you brought that up because you've covered a bunch of great stuff. You and I talked about the women's national soccer team. Many times we talked about Oregon State football, but while I love all of that, you and I kind of have this kinship. I'm a hoop junkie at my core. I was reared dating myself on the Knicks when they were champions, going back to the early 70s when my family had tickets at the Garden. So I'm curious, be it a family member, a special team, how did basketball become, as you say, your major passion?
Oh, well, this is, I can't believe you're asking me this. You must not know this. So my dad was a longtime coach. He coached at every level collegiately. He was coaching at a they're a D3 now. I don't remember what they were then. In Nebraska, that's where I was born.
Wow.
And then we moved to Portland when I was 5 because he took the men's basketball job at Mount Hood Community College in the same conference as Lane, Shemeketa, Lynn Benton, all those schools that probably a lot of your listeners are familiar with. And then he later became the athletic director there. He was an NWAC commissioner, and my mom used to be a big-time official. My mom refed in the ABL the year it went bankrupt. No, the officials did not get their final paychecks.
Wow.
She was also part of the first all-female officiating crew to ref a Oregon State playoff game at the state tournament at the Child Center. So I was basically raised in a gym and love basketball, have had a deep appreciation and love for girls and women's basketball for years because, you know, I just went with my mom to games and my mom was officiating when, like, in the heyday of Oregon City High School girls basketball, and I would watch that and packed gyms, and so no other sport really stood a chance in our house.
I did not know those details, but I'm happy I know them now. So I've got to also throw this out there because I've been a kind of a Christine Brennan like a geek since she covered Tanya versus Nancy 30 years ago. I got to meet her a couple times. She just operates at a unique level, and I love how she's always willing to step outside the fields of play. So she gave you a really big shout-out on Twitter over your Caitlin Clark coverage. How cool of a moment was that?
Oh, it's great. You know, I've gotten to know Christine the last few weeks. Obviously, I know her, we had met before, and like obviously I'm familiar with her work, again to your point, because of figure skating and just her dominance as a reporter whenever she goes to the Olympics. But she is a tremendous advocate for women, like women reporters who work in sports, for women's sports, and she has just been banging the Caitlin Clark drum along with me in all of our daily and weekly meetings when we talk about what we're covering at USA Today. And it's really nice. It's fun that this sport that I have cared about for so long, and because I've cared about it for so long, I have such a deep historic knowledge of it, like that's being acknowledged by colleagues, friends, coaches, everyone.
You know, as we continue with Lindsay Schnell of USA Today, you posted a story by a colleague, Mike Freeman, about Caitlin Clark. And I always talk about recency bias too many people are like, well, what I'm watching now is the best ever. And I love CC. But Cheryl Miller, I've said for many years, you know, she was a four-time Parade All-American in high school, which she did at USC. I mean, one year she led the country in scoring, rebounding, and blocks. So I'm just curious, you know, what made you so enthusiastic about Mike's article, which reminds everybody, yeah, this is awesome. Let's not forget about Cheryl Miller.
Oh, just the same thing. Like, I have always said, and, you know, I said this when Sabrina was at Oregon and racking up triple-doubles and kind of the next big thing, like, no offense to Sabrina, but Cheryl Miller would eat her for lunch. I feel the same way about Caitlin Clark. And that's not a knock on either of those players. That just speaks to Cheryl's brilliance. You know, she was the original stretch four in the women's game. Long, lanky, could dominate inside and out. And I think that a big, big piece of her is, to your point, you know, leading the country in blocks. She impacted every single possession on both ends of the floor. To me, that is really the markings of a great player. Caitlin doesn't really impact the defensive end of the floor. I think that's okay. Again, that's not a knock on her. But I just, you know, Tannen, I'm not as young as I once was, so I can't play the, like, you know, I'm in my 20s card. And so now sometimes I feel kind of old and curmudgeon-y, but when I hear people say, like, oh, Caitlin Clark's the greatest player of all time, I'm like, can you please respect your elders? but I would, you know, and it's been cool because obviously Cheryl Miller has been around at a lot of USC games this year, watching Juju Watkins, who's, I mean, the next big thing in women's basketball, who is currently a big thing in women's basketball. And if Caitlin weren't the reigning player of the year, Juju would probably be the player of the year this year. So anyway, yeah, I just think it's important to understand. And, you know, the game wasn't televised then the way it is now.
Oh, my God.
So people didn't have access to it. But I know enough to know that Cheryl Miller is the GOAT, and I'm happy to educate other people about that.
I think the best story ever is from Reggie Miller. When he come home from a high school game and bragged he scored like 70, and Cheryl was like, yeah, whatever, I just scored 100. So, something crazy.
1,000%. I think, too, like, and then one of the best parts of Caitlin Clark's game is that she is an elite trash talker, but I guarantee you that Cheryl Miller, having been Reggie Miller's sister, like, that woman has got some elite trash talking in her also.
You know, as for Caitlin, you tweeted out the fact that, you know, so many eyes on women's hoops now. You know, the record breaker last week, you know, the logo three to break the scoring mark. Plus, I like with Sabrina and with Caitlin, just the joy they play with. Lindsay, how important is not just her performance, just how she responds when the spotlight's been brightest, because the attention is on her and it seems like she always responds.
Yeah, I think that Caitlin and Angel Reese are kind of leading the charge in these big personalities in the women's game. And social media has given fans like a lens into that. They see these players as people, they get to kind of know them off the court, and then on the court, I think as more and more people pay attention to women's sports, fall in love with women's sports, these women who dominate their sport, because it's not just basketball, don't feel like they have to be these kind of like prissy little girls. That's been a problem for years, and we have often tried to like over-feminize sports, and it's like, let's just let people be themselves. And for both Caitlin and Angel, who are the biggest names in women's basketball, you know, who they are is like elite trash talkers, you know, going back and forth and having these big personalities. Caitlin, I think, is just awesome. You know, she really understands what she's doing for women's basketball. She understands how much it means to the state of Iowa, which has always supported girls and women's basketball. I was in Iowa a couple weeks ago, and I asked her, you know, why do you think the state loves this sport so much? And she said, you know, I think it goes back to Title IX, and our state really believes in Title IX and bought into Title IX. And I was just astonished because there are a lot of athletes Caitlin's age who don't know what Title IX is.
Right.
And for Caitlin to have that not just knowledge of like this federal law, but an understanding of its impact within her state and beyond is awesome. You know, she is just, don't get me wrong, like I said, major trash talker, and having watched practice, I'm here to tell you it's even more intense at practice. But a wonderful, wonderful young woman who is a baller, you know. Lover or hater, you got to acknowledge this. That girl's got some game.
Yeah, I've said B-A-B, badass baller. Just call it what it is. Few final thoughts for Lindsay. All right, I played it at the top, the Oregon State game. I know it was a great game on Sunday. They came up short because they couldn't get a big bucket when they needed. But the UCLA game, for those who missed it, just I ask this. Watch the last 15 seconds. You will think you saw the winning play, what, four different times?
Yes, and that's how they called it, too. They were like, Lauren Betts with the game winner. And then, you know, here we come. We got to go back again.
Yeah, I want, if you could, for folks who haven't seen it, just the atmosphere at Gill. And your tweet killed me. I think you said, I've only watched it 731 times.
Oh, man, I have watched that. Talking about it right now, I want to go rewatch it again. I have the whole game, too. It was funny because I taped the whole game, and then I rewatched it when I got home. And I was watching it just, like, waiting for the last couple minutes. To me, like, the coolest part about that whole situation, first of all, like, always incredible to have a home team win that type of game just because the crowd gets to go nuts, which they obviously did. But the execution, the last 40 seconds, I would argue, the last couple minutes, things really start to get interesting around 3 minutes to go. The execution from both teams, I mean, it was just, that game was played at such a high level. It was one of those games where it, like, sucks that someone had to lose because both teams were doing what you were supposed to do, and it was just punch, counterpunch. There was some discussion afterward about, you know, the men's college game is the only basketball place where you can't advance the ball in the final minute, and the men's game is so far behind. I think it's so boring. The women's game being able to do that, just like you can do it in the NBA, made the game so much more exciting. But for both of those teams to go into timeouts, have coaches draw things up, nail those shots, to want to take those shots, that was something, you know, to tie this all back to Caitlin, or to bring everything full circle. That's one thing that I think a lot of people, like, don't necessarily fully appreciate about Caitlin Clark is she is always willing to take the big shot, even if she misses it. You know, that takes a special kind of competitor. And I thought the same thing against UCLA when it was UCLA Oregon State. Just like, man, like, people want to take these big shots. And it was just incredible. Again, I have watched it like roughly 700 times at this point. And I'm still not entirely sure how Talia got so open for that three. Like, it's kind of crazy when you watch it. UCLA was really concerned about Tamia Gardner in the corner, but just an incredible moment. And I have to say, because, you know, you're a Eugene station and you're very duck forward, I would think that what that game was, what this Oregon State program is going through right now, like, can give Duck fans a little hope, because I know things are not great right now with Kelly Graves and his team, but they're going to be okay. Oregon State was in a rough place just a couple years ago also, and, like, look where they are now. You know, things are cyclical, good coaches, good buy-in from players, kids playing hard, like, good things happen. And I just loved after the game when Talia Von Ohlhofen said, you know, that she went to Scott Ruick and said, like, thanks for not giving up on me. That it all came full circle for her, and she really deserved that.
Well, your insight is impeccable, because I was going to ask you about the Oregon program, and you actually challenged the story in the Oregonian by adding, you know, those annoying factual tidbits. And I'll throw in one thing, Linz. This is one losing season. I mean, it's not like the wheels have come off the cart. So kind of restate your case, how in discussing Kelly Graves, I think your quote was pretty much, he's earned a lot of leeway.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not that long ago that they would have played, you know, for they would have been favored to win the title, right, if the tournament hadn't been canceled. Obviously, no one saw that coming. But the big thing that's changed since then is because Kelly obviously has brought in a lot of good classes, is we live in this world now with the portal is just like the means of transferring. It's more about the fact that you have this instant eligibility. So if kids aren't playing, if kids don't want to wait, they can leave right away. And, you know, that's great for them. And I totally support that. But that does mean there's going to be some navigation as a coach, like in this new world. I think the days of signing, you know, the top class where you bring in five stars, like that's probably not going to happen anymore across the college basketball landscape because those kids want to play. And I think that one really cool thing we've seen in women's basketball the last few years, Sabrina coming to Oregon is a good example of this, is kids picking somewhere other than UConn and deciding they're going to help a different program, like reach new heights. And, you know, I think Kelly is a good coach. Kelly won a lot of games as when he was at Gonzaga and then when he was at Oregon. Kelly worked transfers like way before the portal. You know, he was always known at Gonzaga for they would get like one or two good transfers. Now those kids would have to sit out a year, but still like understanding how they're going to incorporate into their program. And then I'm not saying that Peyton Scott is the second coming of Caitlin Clark, but not having a true point guard is really, really hard when your best player, Grace Van Sluten, is a four. Like, how are you going to get her the ball? So they're, you know, learning. I mean, I'm not in practice every day, but I appreciate what Kelly said the other day in his post game when he got those questions about job security, when he said, you know, the kids play hard at practice. I just think it's really tough mentally to lose a lot of games. When I watch Oregon, I don't think that they have quit on him. People might have different opinions on that, but I don't think so. But I also think more than that is, again, he's earned a little leeway. And a lot of programs across the country have had to adjust to like losing a lot of kids out of the portal one year, and you got to kind of figure everything out. And I just believe that they will figure things out.
Folks, she's Lindsay Schnell, USA Today, online, usatoday.com. Keep you wired into hoops, Oregon, Oregon State, the national scene. On Twitter, use the handle at Lindsay_Schnell. Linz, always enjoy our talks. Be well. Thanks again for your time. And, of course, always look forward to talking to you again not too far down the road.
More women's basketball, anytime you want to discuss it, I'm here.
All right, tournament's coming. I'm going to hold you to your word there, Linz.
Sounds good. Have a good day.
All right, take care.